Hello and welcome back to An Abundance of Not. It is June the 17th. I don't even know what day it is for Wade. He's been taking so many days off work. I don't know what he's got going on. But it's Wednesday for the real world.
It's E3. Yay! What's up, everyone?
How you doing?
I'm fantastic.
Magnificent.
Do we want to try to talk in voices all podcast?
Oh, yeah.
I'm Peter Baelish.
So. I talk...
I'm Batman.
I'm not saying I'm Batman. But I'm I am saying that Batman and I have never been seen in the same room together.
Exactly. How you doing, guys?
Well, it's a little warm here in Southern California, as usual, leading into summer.
Yeah.
So if you hear some rustling,
sloshing,
that would be my
jacket. You guys getting sloshed? Oh.
Yes. A little bit of ice water to get me through the situation.
Same here.
Oh, that's what we're calling this now.
The situation.
It's a situation.
It's a situation when the studio is above normal temperature.
And you are in the situation.
It stops becoming the studio. It starts becoming the situation room.
That's right. The war room. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where do you find yourself in the world this week?
I find myself in the extreme northeast of the country, Vermont, to be exact.
I think we addressed this last week, so same place.
We did, yeah, same location as last week.
Very good, very good.
And we'll be again next week, well, if the schedule holds.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks.
Weekend stuff, let's see. Saturday, my daughter, around the corner from where we live, there's a park, and apparently the whole area was formerly part of this big ranch called the Bennett Ranch, and then when they sold or whatever, it was subdivided and whatnot. But there's a park up the street, and they have this bridge that apparently was around since this area was actually a ranch. And so some people in the community decided they wanted to paint it, decorate it.
Beautify it.
With some images that kind of represented the ranch and whatnot. And it was free to participate in. You just had to kind of register, but more accurately just show up. So my daughter did that and got to paint the bridge. So she has a little bit of her influence that might last for some time.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Saturday evening, we went and saw Jurassic World.
Yep.
So we will talk about that shortly. And try to refrain from spoilers, as I'm aware that you plan to see it this weekend, Brad.
Absolutely.
Very good.
Stuff happens.
Yes. And Sunday, quiet day for myself, although I went out and got some tri-tips to celebrate the season finale of Game of Thrones. So that was a good one thus for that. Although bittersweet, if you're not a Thrones fan, never mind. If you are a Thrones fan and you listen to our Thrones podcast, you'll know all about that. Wade, anything you want to add?
No, considering that I had pretty much the same weekend as you, except for the painting the bridge part, because in order to get the days off that I have for E3, I then had to fill in and work on my normal weekend for people to fill in for me for these 3 days. So... And it's pretty much go to work, come home, go see Jurassic Park.
There you go.
World, sorry.
Yes, Jurassic World.
Jurassic Park 4.
I suppose.
Yes.
So,
and yourself, Brett.
Speaking of Jurassic Park, with the release of Jurassic World, we realized that our kids had not seen the first 3 movies.
Okay.
So we decided to make a weekend of it. Went to Walmart and got the set, essentially. Walmart had a special on.
They do that from time to time.
Especially
when there's time to time.
A new one coming out, everyone's going to be like, you know what we should do?
Yep.
Watch
exactly what we did.
Just like, exactly what you did, you consumeristic conformists.
You capitalist pig.
Wow, that escalated quickly.
You want to say that again just for effect? I'm not sure we really captured that.
Yeah, tell me how you really feel.
Welcome to Mother Russia.
We got the first three movies and watched them sequentially in the evening. So Friday night was one, Saturday night was two, and Sunday night was three. We also worked on the house. I don't think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but we are looking at relocating the satellite studio to a more southern location.
You haven't. I've seen blurbs from the misses, but I didn't hear that this was a for sure potential.
Yep. We're definitely working on it. So at the moment, you know, we both have to-do lists 5 miles long. You know, the standard stuff around the house that just kind of breaks down over time and you don't really think about it until something forces you to.
Yeah, it's like, you have a reason to.
You know, we kind of need to paint.
Yep.
Huh. Have you gotten the pool up yet?
The pool is almost up. We've been having a lot of rain lately, which for a pool the size that we have, rain is just obnoxious and messes with the chemicals. So, it's been diluting my chlorine out.
That's what covers are for.
It's called a tarp. They probably sell for $20 at Walmart. Jeez. You were just there.
Like you're all expert or something.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Now that's still being worked on. Hopefully that should be up soon. And then, you know, just odds and ends around the house, getting it ready.
Gotcha. Well, very good. You guys have a general area you're looking at, or is it still up in the air?
Well, we have a general area. We're looking somewhere in the Atlanta suburbs.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That is quite a bit south.
It is quite a bit south, but my dad and stepmom live down there, and we have friends and family down there, so, you know, it'd be good.
Sounds good. I've heard good things about Georgia. Well, very good. With that, let's talk about some movies. Only really one movie to talk about this week. It is, I believe it's Disney. Shame on me for not having that readily available. Interns, get on it. Inside Out, rated critically 100%.
Wow. I am looking forward to this one.
Okay. PG, as you can expect from a kid movie. Here we go. Growing up can be a bumpy road. And it's no exception for Riley, who is an unproofed. I don't know if that's the right word.
Unproven?
Probably that. I probably just typed it really fast. No, that doesn't even make sense either. Anyway, uprooted. That's what I wanted to say. Who is uprooted from her Midwest life when her father starts a new job in San Francisco. Like all of us, Riley is guided by her emotions. Joy, voiced by Amy Fowler. Fear, by Bill Hader. Anger, by the only one that really should ever voice anger, Lewis Black.
Don't know. Well, I suppose if you wanted to keep it, you know, clean, but Samuel L. Jackson would have been good. But they would have had to bleep every other word.
It's true. Now, you must not have ever... Have you seen Lewis Black's stand-up comedies? He's not exactly clean.
Okay.
But if you get a chance, he's hilarious. And when you see him, you'll know why.
Okay.
Why he fits anger so well.
I'd go see the movie just for that and not hear it. I'd be like, yep, let's go.
Actually, side note, when I first saw the trailer, I thought, you know who'd be the best person for anger? Lewis Black. And then on the trailer, Lewis Black.
Nice.
Called it. Mindy Kaling, I believe is her last name. She's in that Mindy Project show. She's also she's in that Discover card commercial. Anyway, she plays Disgust and Sadness by Phyllis Smith. The emotions live in Headquarters, the control center for Inside Riley's mind. where they help advise her through everyday life. As Riley and her emotions struggle to adjust to a new life in San Francisco, turmoil ensues in headquarters. Although Joy, Riley's main and most important emotion, tries to keep things positive, the emotions conflict on how best to navigate a new city, house, and school. And interns are back. It is Disney Pixar. Which is what I thought. I just wasn't confident in that.
You should mark on the fact that a guy named Hader is doing the voice for a feeling.
H-A-D-E-R. Hader. Not Hater. But I see where you're coming from. Yeah, this
and
looks...
I don't know if any of either of you guys watch Saturday Night Live.
No, okay. Unfortunately.
Bill Hader is one of the cast on SNL.
Yeah, okay. I know the name and I've seen his face. He's very familiar, but...
I haven't.
Not something that I subscribe to.
And Amy used to be.
Yes. Yes. I've been looking forward to this one. It looks really, really well done. Very creative, and it should be hilarious.
Agreed. I'm looking forward to it.
In the box office, I guess we'll just come out and say it. Jurassic World smashed records. was the highest grossing movie in the opening weekend ever. It surpassed Avengers 1, which pulled in like $207 million. Jurassic World pulls in $208.8 million. It was also the third highest revenue-generating movie on opening day behind Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 and Avengers Age of Ultron. So good on the Jurassic team. Spy comes in second at 15.6, San Andreas third at 10.8, Insidious Chapter 3 at 7.3 million. There.
That's a huge opening weekend. I mean, ridiculous. Let's not get around here.
It's not. And considering the budget for the movie was $150 million, and globally they pulled in over $500 million, I think they're doing okay.
The producer's sitting in his big chair with a cigar going, yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. You know, guys, I think we did a good thing here.
And that's interesting I think the timing. I think the timing plays into it. Because you figure it's a sequel of a sequel of a sequel.
Yes.
You know, this is not original content here.
No, but...
I mean, I'm sure they did original things with it. I'm not trashing on the movie at all. Don't take it that way.
The original concept of dinosaurs and man... Yes.
And a theme park-ish type setting. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. This is movie number 4. But apparently, you know, the time was right, and it's a new generation. And all of us that remember the original Jurassic Park went, oh, yeah.
Yes. Now, I remember in high school, which was 10 years ago for me, that Jurassic Park 3 came out, and I actually was able to acquire it like the week before it came out in theaters. So I never went and saw it in theaters. I was given a copy through the black market.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I just admitted to it. It's fine.
Oh, my goodness.
But 10 years later, I think you're right. The timing played a big thing. If they would try to release one of these every couple of years, it'd be like, okay, another, you know, broken record. But
yep.
They waited long enough. They've got a new cast. They've got some interesting story points. And they opened themselves up to a new generation of audience. And clearly it worked.
Do you want to speak about a movie that's going to get a lot of money, but it's going to be completely screwed? Star Wars.
Why do you say it's completely screwed?
Because people are going to pick through that with a fine-tooth comb.
let's talk about that briefly. We'll come back to Jurassic World. J.J. Abrams, who's doing Star Wars, also did the first Star Trek reboot.
And people would consider those ones to be pretty terrible.
No.
I've heard some people say they were bad, but okay.
You're always going to get some of the extremists, like when Nightmare on Elm Street came out, the one that we saw, people didn't like that because it blended multiple movies together. What people have to realize is it's not a remake, it's a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have similarities, It's going to go off in its own direction a little bit, while still very much being based in that universe and world and whatever.
But you know some people are going to see a sliver of something wrong and then complain about it as a mass explosion.
Well, I don't think we saw a lot of that with Star Trek, and I think J.J. Abrams respects the fans enough to make sure he does it right.
Agreed.
Yep.
We've seen that with his previous works, and I have no reason to doubt that for his future works. Okay, cool.
I have high hopes for Star Wars. Yeah, hopefully it'll be as good as his remake of reboot of Star Trek.
Yeah, I do hope it's good. I hope most movies are good, but the problem is some are bad. I'm not initially saying that Star Trek was bad. That was from what I've heard. Some people say it's bad, but whatever. Yeah.
Sure.
Here's You're a always question for you, haters. Brad. Here's a question for you. If on the week that we talk about Star Wars, The Force Awakens, a.k.a. Episode 7, and the critics tank it, like it's 10%. How will that affect you going to see the movie?
Me?
You'll still go to see it, obviously, as would we. But how much of an effect do you think that will have on your conceptions, perceptions, preceptions going into the movie?
It won't.
You put no weight into it whatsoever. I've said before
on air that I don't put much stock in critics' ratings.
Okay.
I go see what sounds interesting to me, and I draw my own conclusions.
Understood.
I've seen movies that get high 90s, and I hate them. And I've seen movies that get, you know, 20-30s, and I enjoyed them. So, whatever.
I think I would be going into it a little bit skewed. Like yourself, I don't put a lot of stock into most critic ratings. Rotten Tomatoes, I do, which is what we base all of our ratings on for the show, and revenue figures. It seems a little bit more credible than some, but at the same time, you still have the extreme of the critics looking at it for critical content and not entertainment content. So, anyway. Wade, Jurassic World, give me your reactions to it. Maybe a couple, maybe small points that won't give anything away.
Let's walk on eggshells, huh?
Yes. First of all, how did you come out of the movie feeling? Enjoyed, impressed, disgusted?
I liked it. You know, it's still held up to the same, you know, standards, even now we have, you know, with better looking dinosaurs. Hats off to the woman who ran around in high heels for 24 hours.
That is Ron Howard's daughter, the famous producer Ron Howard.
Well, hats off, so she ran around in high heels for 24 hours.
Sure she did. Yeah, the movie is impressive. There's a lot of little callbacks to previous movies.
And one very big one, but whatever.
One very big one. Actually, I think we can talk about that without spoiling the story. But they do a flyover of the kind of the entryway to the park. And if you are paying attention, you see John Hammond's face or kind of a, I think there's a statue of him and maybe like a face, his face on stuff to give you a callback to Hammond, which was the original scientist curator in the first movie.
Mad scientist.
Also, there's a Spinosaurus skeleton off to the left side of the frame during a flyover, which is a call out to Jurassic Park 3.
The DNA guy.
Yeah, so there's other little things like that throughout. I don't want to say all of them because, you know, it's kind of fun to spot them when you see it.
Just say the DNA guy, just let people worry with that.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Don't give it all away. Jeez.
Exactly.
No, we're going to make you look for them. That's the thing.
Now, we do get to see a T-Rex in this movie, as we should. Now, I've since read an article to validate this, but it has come out by fans and by legitimate press that it is supposed to be the T-Rex from the first movie. You see her in a couple different shots. And I guess if you're really looking closely, and now that you may be aware of this, you can look for this when you see it. But there should be some scars on her that would reflect the fight with the raptors at the end of Jurassic Park 1.
Interesting.
So that's kind of cool. It's kind of cool they brought that kind of full circle, if that's the plan. I had a couple small continuity or kind of like really moments in it. Really one big one that I won't get into. Aside from that, I really, really enjoyed the movie as a whole. They brought in some really interesting elements, some of the science factors, some other things you're kind of like, why would you do that? But within the world that they're painting, you can go along with pretty much all of it.
I find it interesting that the logo for Jurassic Park has always been a T-Rex.
Yes.
Because...
No, not always.
Pretty much, yes.
At one time, it was a Spinosaurus.
Did they do a Spinosaurus for Jurassic Park 3?
They did.
On the logo?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Okay.
Interns are checking.
My comment to that, though, was that... When you stop and think about it, the T-Rex is actually a side character. Like, think about it. The first movie is primarily about the raptors.
Yes.
The third movie is primarily about the Spinosaurus.
Yes, and Wade is right in that the third movie, Jurassic Park 3, has three slashes, and the skeleton is of a Spinosaurus. The jaw is elongated, and you see some of the spikes, bony spikes for the back, and the arms
are longer. Then I retract my statement.
But for movie 1 and 2 Jurassic World...
It was the T-Rex, yes.
It was a T-Rex.
And Jurassic World's primary antagonist is not a T-Rex.
Sure. However, let's see here. Were there raptors in Jurassic Park 3? Yes, because they had the...
Because they stole the egg.
Stole the egg. So all three movies have had a T-Rex present.
Mm-hmm.
All three movies have had raptors present. Now four movies. Mm-hmm. Both those statements still apply.
Wait, there's raptors?
There's more like one. What's interesting, let's see, where was I going with this?
Has the T-Rex in it?
Has the T-Rex. Oh, what's interesting, though, if I remember correctly from my days of geology class, is that I believe the T-Rex did not exist in the Jurassic period.
No, they're from the Cretaceous. Yes.
And what's also interesting is we as the people are so ingrained that the T-Rex is this badass of a dinosaur. It's the top of the chain. It's not the biggest predatory dinosaur that lived.
Yeah, you always see the educational videos where it's like, it's the T-Rex fighting a stegosaurus. Never actually happened.
Yeah, that maybe, I don't know the facts on that, but that might be true. Stegosaurus may have been Jurassic, whereas T-Rex was Cretaceous. But the Spinosaurus is bigger, and I think there was one other predatory land dinosaur that was bigger than a T-Rex as well. I think it was third in the list, but we're so ingrained that the T-Rex is this oldest epitome of predator.
Walking teeth and claws and things of that nature, but there's things bigger.
I was like, it's horrifying. Where are you going with this?
I don't know. I had to reboot the system, apparently.
Come back.
To wrap it up, if you're a Jurassic Park dinosaur fan, period, you will enjoy this movie. If you haven't seen it yet, like Brad, you're an idiot, and you better be going to see it this weekend, like Brad.
Watch it.
Like Brad is.
You have the ability to rectify that, Brad.
That's right.
I plan to.
And with that, the news.
Well, back to our trusty old net neutrality subject.
Woohoo!
Sit down.
Yay. How are you?
Okay. So, Making the news this week, of course, the FCC rules went into effect last week. They are now binding. First to fall victim is not one of our favorite companies to pick on. It was neither Comcast nor Verizon, but Time Warner Cable, who is being threatened with a lawsuit. San Diego-based Commercial Network Services owns and operates San Diego Live, a website that serves live video streams. And according to a report from the Washington Post, the company is only days away from filing a lawsuit, alleging that Time Warner Cable has held its traffic hostage by charging unreasonably high rates to avoid being throttled.
Nice. CNS, blackmailing going on.
Say again?
A little blackmailing going on.
Yeah, so the boss of CNS says that Time Warner Cable's policies are a blatant violation of the new net neutrality rules. They are not pushing traffic to Time Warner Cable. They are serving traffic to Time Warner customers that have requested their services, and therefore, you know, the traffic should be allowed to pass without delay. Time Warner Cable responded by stating that it has done nothing wrong and that it's a peering issue, not a usage issue. So I guess we will see if CNS, Commercial Network Services, does file their lawsuit. I guess we'll get our first challenge of the law and see how it holds up.
I am impressed that a company is this on point in terms of the law went into effect last week officially. The guidelines are now binding, so to speak, and they are pretty much at the doorsteps of the courthouse saying, yeah, we need to talk about this.
Yep. Was it on point, or has this been happening and they...
Now they have ready. The ability to dispute it. Yeah. I mean... And that's more likely the case, but they, once the law went into effect, they're like, okay, let's go.
Let's do this. We're like, we finally have an outlet to get rid of this.
Yep. Well, from one concept of data throttling to another, AT&T fined with a record $100 million over the unlimited data dispute. We've talked about this before, where the... FCC was suing, FTC, I believe, was suing AT&T because of the lack of transparency or the fact that AT&T was offering unlimited data to its customers, but then throttling that data rate once customers got to a certain usage. So FCC has stepped in and said, you're being fined $100 million as a result of this. AT&T will most definitely dispute these charges, arguing that there was never an agreement on data rate and they never charged for using more data than a certain limit. FCC says that it's all a result of AT&T misleading its customers for offering unlimited data but then throttling back to below advertised data speeds.
What?
No. I was about to say, like...
So it's not that they're throttling, but they're throttling below advertised speeds. So if they were saying, hey, you can get, 3G data speeds and, minimum, and people are getting higher than that, they're throttling then below that data rate. AT&T claims complete transparency with their customers and that they have exceeded the FCC's disclosure of requirements... or disclosure requirements, rather, when informing their customers of the situation. Let's not be naive and think AT&T is the only one caught with their pants down on this one. Verizon was also guilty of slowing speeds. However, they only do so in congested environments and claim that the data speeds are returned to normal once users are out of a congested area or that the congestion has dissipated. AT&T is reported to have reduced data speeds. So when AT&T throttles people, they throttle them all the way through until the next billing cycle. Wow. So that's the big difference there. Again, this fine is a result of the FTC lawsuit. which is still in process through federal courts in California. And one other little side note, the FTC had also accused TracFone of data throttling. TracFone settled outside of court for a mere $40 million fee.
Oh, is that all?
Fine. Yeah, that's a pocket change, you know.
No big deal. Whatever.
So AT&T is still in hot water over this. I would love if this comes to terms. The FTC lawsuit is requesting AT&T to refund customers who had the unlimited data package, which was me. So I'd love a refund.
Unfortunately, though, I think it's unfortunate. This is becoming more and more of a moot point as they move people off of unlimited plans.
Yes.
I mean, you cannot get an unlimited data plan anymore.
Mm-mm. That's correct. Now, in the article that I read, though, they said that AT&T Verizon came out with their unlimited data option right around or just before the iPhone was released.
Yes.
Which, as we all know, revolutionized the way and how we use our phones. We all had Windows phones prior to that, but it just wasn't the same.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but the way it used to be was you got unlimited data and you had to pay per text message and per minute that you used the phone.
Yes. Now you have unlimited texts and phone calls.
Yes.
But have to pay for your data.
Because that's not where they make the money anymore.
They're like, oh, well, what do they use less? Yeah. Okay, we'll make that unlimited then.
Mm-hmm. And now the roles have reversed because with the smartphone age, we're all using our phones for more and more stuff. Streaming, you know, browsing, whatever.
Exactly.
I know some of my coworkers who have Netflix on their phone, and they'll sit there and watch that.
Yep. Now, there are some phone companies that do offer an unlimited package. I have a guy at work who... he streams Netflix all the time over his data connection and claims that he's never paid an overage and has had no issues throttling. But I think he might be with one of the third-party companies, not with one of the primaries.
Sure.
So not really sure where he falls in that, but he's getting away with it.
Good for him.
I agree.
Well, as we all know, the biggest... U.S. gaming event is going on. I think this is day two, even though they only count the first day as actually day zero, which kind of questions me. But everyone has now gotten done with their conferences. I have, well, linked to that, each conference in the show notes, so nice little ease of browsing when you're done listening to us. You can go listen to them. A lot of nice things come out, especially the view of the Final Fantasy VII Remake. This has been something the community has been asking for a very, very long time.
I'm curious about this. I was never big into Final Fantasy because I could never get past the turn-based fighting style. It's such a like momentum killer for me when playing a game like this. However... Final Fantasy VII was kind of the big one that a lot of people associated with, and with some of the graphics that they're now having, we saw with the Advent Children movie a couple years back, that had there should they make a game with those graphics or now better, it could be quite interesting. But if it's still turn-based fighting, you can count me out.
It probably will be because everyone will want to keep that similar.
Probably.
You know, they're like, if they revamp, like, a major thing, people will just flip the table.
You know, I've played a couple turn-based games before. The most prominent being Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Ah, okay.
And I actually have the iPad edition, which is a really good port of the old PC game. It's now... wow, several years old. We won't go into exactly how many.
Don't date yourself.
Yeah.
Right, it's okay. There's a Star Wars Battlefront coming out. You're good.
Awesome. I'm not a big fan of turn-based either. You know, I want it to be a skill level thing. Let me fight as fast as I can fight. That being said, for more casual games, which I'm certainly not putting... this one in that category, but for more casual games, I don't think it's as big of a problem. I guess it's all in how it's implemented.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, for me, I like the seamless into a battle, out of a battle, hack and slash versus a running into a checkpoint and then the screen changes to a turn-based fight mode and then changes back. To me, it's an immersion issue and I don't like it, but many people do, and that's fine.
It breaks your immersion, whatever.
Yep.
But I mean, this kind of marks, hopefully marks a turnaround for video game companies. It's like, hey, look, listen to the people who play your games and watch how much they sell when you actually give them what they want.
Yeah.
Now, it's important to say, though, they just announced that they're going to be doing it, which means it's still 3+ years out.
Mm.
I mean, right? It's not in development. They just said they were going to do it.
I mean, this is Square Enix that were making it where they're like, hey, guys, do you want a Kingdom Hearts phone game? Like, no, we want Kingdom Hearts 3, please.
Yeah.
Well, they should have announced that afterward, but it's like, still, come on, guys. And of course, with this, the next Final Fantasy, and Kingdom Hearts 3, I think they have a lot on their plate. So,
churning them out?
Well, everything, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. But they did announce a new studio, which is the Tokyo RPG Factory.
Okay.
So think it that will take over most of the RPGs with Square Enix.
I heard too that the reason why Final Fantasy is called Final Fantasy is that
The
first game, the director or creator who did it was going to be his last game. I don't know, from age or just from retirement.
I thought it was the company's last game.
Something along those lines. I heard it was a director, but I don't know if it's deeper than that. And so it was going to be the Final Fantasy, the end. And that's why all the games may have some similarities, but they're very different in terms of world and story. There's not a lot of crossover from one to the other. There might be some similar character types or aspects, but for the most part, they're pretty different.
Well, the same thing was for Dead or Alive.
Yeah. That was going to make or break a studio, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
So,
anyway, fun fact.
The game is going to do phenomenally well because people have been asking for it, but, I mean, this hopefully should show something to the game creators, the developers and publishers to say, you know, listen to your fans, and they'll respond, you know, with their wallets. You give them what they want, they'll give you what you want.
Money.
Exactly.
Money. Very good. Another big studio who's got a lot on their plate, I won't get into it, but I've heard plenty, and that is Ubisoft, one of my more favorite developers based on the games that I play. They made quite a few announcements, I believe, today. And good things coming.
What Ubisoft games do you like? Do you like Ghost Recon or...
No, oh, Assassin's Creed. That is Ubisoft.
I didn't realize that was Ubisoft.
And yeah. The Far Cry series is Ubisoft, although I don't think they announced a new Far Cry.
I did not see a new Far Cry.
But they did announce an Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is going to take place in London.
During the Industrial Revolution?
Yep. Someone that I followed made the comment that it looks like Assassin's Creed meets Grand Theft Auto, which could be interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested.
But they did announce, a new Rainbow Six game, a new Tom Clancy's... Ghost Recon.
They have three Tom Clancy games in the works.
Yeah, Ghost...
Rainbow Six Siege.
Okay.
I forget what the other two was.
As a Ghost Recon Winter something, I think. Anyway, Ubisoft's got a lot of stuff coming out. Yeah, I played one of the earlier Ghost Recons, but I have not followed it.
Okay.
But yeah, I still have Assassin's Creed Rogue in plastic on my desk here, so shame on me.
Oops, sorry.
I'm a bad, bad person.
Well, yeah, finally,
get on that.
Finally, I'll be able to rectify a egregious sin of not playing Final Fantasy VII. I mean, but with... what, Final Fantasy VII, the next Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts, and I believe I heard rumor of them redoing a, or remaking Ratchet and Clank.
I did hear that.
I think I now have a reason to buy a PS4.
Which is interesting, because Ratchet and Clank were formerly with Insomniac Studios, who I shoot pool with, one of the... I'm not really sure what his title is.
One of the employees.
But he works for Insomniac, who's done all the Ratchet and Clanks. But I think now that they have an exclusive... I know they have pretty much an exclusive Xbox publishing agreement.
It's probably like a timed release or something.
But I think they still retain rights to Ratchet and Clank. So I got to ask him how that's going to work. Maybe they sold the rights. I don't know.
Well, I think I do have a reason to buy a PS4.
There you go.
I'm still going to hold off till, like, okay, these are ready. Because I don't want to buy this thing. I mean, this is one of the major problems I have with these, with console generations. You buy it, but there's no games for it.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's,
well, I think there's plenty of stuff out now. I mean, Assassin's Creed. What was the other one? There was Rogue was only offered on PS3, and the other one,
I don't know,
Unity.
I don't,
Unity was next gen only, so which bummed me out.
They're making another Gears of War, which is weird. I thought they said it was going to be a trilogy.
Well, it was.
Well, they said, like, it was going to be a trilogy and then just, like, not make them anymore. But here they are.
And it's still a trilogy, plus one.
It's an expansion pack. It's
fine. That's right. It's DLC. Shut up.
I can see someone likes the Gears of War series.
No, actually, I don't. Just being funny.
No, but, it's actually funny because Garrett and I used to play, what's it called? We used to play Gears of War online.
Was it online? Yeah. Isn't that the one where you could, like, hide behind, like, the ledges and stuff really well?
Yep, that was that cover system. That
blind fire over top of it?
Yep.
I think that was only Gears of War 1, though. I don't think we played 2.
Yeah, exactly. But that was that one time where I just wrecked an entire team, and you're like, what? One of my best gaming moments.
I don't dislike it. It's just not my favorite. It's a third person, and I'm not very big on third person shooters. I prefer first person. I feel the... Never mind. Anyway.
Speaking of first person, like, I was expecting more of Oculus Rift-supported stuff. You know, the AR and the VR stuff. Microsoft did it with Minecraft, but... I mean, if this is, like, the only thing they're going to shoot with, Minecraft AR...
I think more stuff will come. So they did Minecraft for HoloLens. They also did a Halo 5
asset.
From what I could see,
viewer.
It was an asset demo.
And I do remember another company saying that they made, I've reported on this, made an entire studio for VR technology.
Sony
for VR
did.
Games.
Sony came out with a whole Sony VR group.
Yeah. So I think we'll get there with it. Kind of like the problem with the next-gen consoles is nobody's going to want it. You know, it's a chicken and the egg. Do you buy it without content, or do you wait for content? And are they going to make content when nobody's buying it?
Well, and that's a catch-22. Show me a reason to buy it. You know, go, look what we have on the system. Don't you want it? No, that's why I haven't bought a PS4. You know, Now it's I'm still not going to until I notice, like, all these are there. You know, all the games are, you know, close to being out and they're not screwed with. But, you know, that was the problem I had, is that you release these consoles and there's no games on them.
Well, at least there will be Minecraft. Woo-hoo! We will always have Minecraft.
Oh, by the way,
have Minecraft.
Can we finally speak about the blunder of the, once again, the Xbox? Oh, you can finally, you know, reverse compatibility of your games.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they in their conference, they're like, yeah, you can play your Xbox 360 games now.
Oh, yeah, they allowed back compatibility. I saw a tweet about this or something.
It's like, here, here's a Switch.
Wait, what?
Yeah, a new software update allows backwards compatibility on Xbox One to at least some of 360 games.
Wait, what? That's awesome right there.
No,
okay,
no,
I got to give them that.
No, it's not.
Why is it not?
Yes, it is.
Because it should have been with the console release anyway.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
I'll agree with you on that. But it wasn't. And so the fact that they're going back and putting it in...
I'll give them credit where they... was it them? But they said, like, you don't have to pay for them. It's like, yeah, no sh... No, I can't say that on this podcast.
a quote from Phil Spencer, this is something that you've been begging for since launch, and we didn't even think it was possible.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Because I'm surprised they didn't charge for it.
Because you can't just, oh, look, now you have backwards compatibility. They planned that.
Well, maybe they've been working on it this long because it was such a big deal.
We can only
hope. I think it's awesome, and... one of my last holdouts for not buying a one is gone.
Huh? One of your last reservations.
One of my last reservations because, you know, we have quite a collection of Xbox 360 games. And one of my biggest problems was that you couldn't play them. So, yeah. I'm excited.
Well, I mean, my biggest... concern, I've said it before and I'll say it again, you know, have the games on it. You know, your whole reason that you didn't want to play was partly because there was nothing to play on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to have backwards compatibility to want to get it.
Exactly.
So, Sony, come on.
I think Sony
PlayStation
allowed...
4, PlayStation 3, let's go.
I think Sony already allowed them to do it, though.
No, they said they weren't doing backwards compatibility, I thought. I know my PS3, I could play all the way back to PS4
games. For you if you could play all your PS3 games on it.
Is that what they said?
Huh?
We were talking over each other, so repeat yourself.
I said, how much sweeter would it make a PS4 for you if you could play all your PS3 games on it?
Well, see, I'm playing PS1 games on my current PS3, so unless I could totally replace my PS3 with a PS4 and get all that functionality,
sure,
I'd have to run them both in series anyway.
Right.
That's if they just went and said, look, all of the games that you had on our last three consoles you can now have are now available for download on... the one, the PS4. But that's pretty much the thing, only thing I could think of them doing.
Well, hopefully they can figure it out, because that's awesome functionality right there. Yep. I don't care who you are, that's awesome right there. Speaking of technology.
Yes, moving on, please.
I think we've beat games to death.
Yes.
Nope, we have an extra life.
One up.
Level up. We have spoken in the past about the advancements in 3D printing technology.
Yes.
And we've talked about the basics. You know, just basic 3D printing. And then that evolved, and we've talked about printing medical
implants and whatever,
implants,
yes.
Implants, yeah. Yep, needed medical supplies. And we've talked about... there was that 3D printer that they were going to build, you know, small one-room houses with.
Yep.
Remember that?
And then there was the NASA 3D printer making rocket parts.
Rocket parts? Okay. Well, here's another one for you.
Great.
A 3D printing company based in Amsterdam has developed a revolutionary multi-axis robotic 3D printer that can draw structures in the air.
What?
It works by taking raw, I'm guessing pelletized or some other small form of steel, and it turns it molten and then uses that to form the... So it's actually building out of molten steel the components out of its printhead. And they are planning on using four of them to build a bridge over a river in Amsterdam. So it will be a complete steel bridge that will be printed in the air.
Interesting.
That's what I thought.
But so, I mean, it's got to start at one end, obviously, and work its way across. So it's not necessarily building it in air, right?
Well, so they're going to use four. Two on each side of the river and one on each side of the bridge, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can do it, I mean, it puts a lot of construction guys out of the job, which kind of sucks.
A little bit.
It shows what we can accomplish with technology, which is pretty awesome.
So this is going to be the concern going forward, actually, in my mind. More and more of this tech stuff, which is way cool, no denying that. The more we roboticize things, I don't know if that's a word, but it
Skynet.
Is now. You know, we're just going to start putting more and more people out of work.
Yes. It reminds me of, you've seen the movie iRobot with Will Smith, right?
I have.
And he's talking to the main CEO of the robotics company, and he had the idea for a new ad campaign where he says you got an old carpenter, he's painstakingly making a chair by hand, shaping the wood, carving it, and then you show one of your robots who makes the same chair twice as fast, and you could say, what was the name of that company anyway? Whatever the name of the company was, crapping on the little guy.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, if you can replace an entire construction crew with some tech guys and 3D printers and the probably more minimal staff that it would take to operate those printers, that's going to cause a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Russia's probably loving it. They're still communists, so, you know, whatever. But too much? Too far?
Welcome back to the motherland.
Apparently we went there.
Well,
it should be interesting going forward. Again, really cool tech, but, you know, also a little worrying that us humans actually still need jobs and money. Unless we develop a completely monetary-free society.
Not anytime soon.
Just go around with just a bunch of 3D printers printing apples and stuff like that.
Print it on organic printer.
Well, just prints out food. At what point do we become Star Trek, where we all work more or less for the government, everybody on the Earth? Therefore, you know, the only commodity really then is power, because, you know, you've got the replicators that generate food and everything is provided and you do your job and, you know, you live in houses that are 3D printed and transport by transport. I mean, you know, we're getting there.
Yep.
We're still quite a ways off. I'm not, you know, delusional here, but one by one, these pieces are falling into place.
Get ready. Well, not really get ready, but be prepared to hear about the people who died of starvation in the holodecks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not quite there, but it is concerning.
We're going to have to really adapt here.
Yeah, we have to evaluate the situation that we're putting ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
But the tech is cool.
From the tech angle, it is definitely way cool. No denying that.
Very good. Let's see here. You guys are familiar with Uber. Do they have them? They got them out there by you too?
They are just starting, actually.
So there was a lawsuit where a driver, currently categorized as an independent contractor, is fighting to recuperate expenses, operational expenses, from Uber. So an official at the California Labor Commission took an axe to Uber's claim about its drivers being independent operators and not employees. The deputy labor commissioner challenged the business model that is currently based, or that is the base of the transportation industry, as well as the so-called sharing economy. An Uber driver, I have not mentioned names here for respect there, argued that the company owed her money for costs she incurred while driving customers around in the car that she owned. Mm-hmm. Now, in a normal employee-employer relationship, those costs would be then reimbursed by the employer, the company, and not just an expense to be accrued by the worker. Uber considers drivers as independent contractors who would then be responsible for the costs to their own vehicle accrued during business conducted. This helps Uber avoid paying gas, buying vehicles, paying payroll tax, and other compensation costs. This concept hinges, though, that the drivers are truly independent. Drivers claim that Uber is holding all the reins in this agreement, and they retain all necessary control over the operations. Uber defends that and says they're merely a technological platform designed to simply enable drivers and passengers to transact the business of transportation. Essentially, they're facilitators who allow the transactions to occur, but not actually running the business. The plaintiff in this case, the driver, claims that she's not owed any back wages. She was paid for the services that she did, but as an employee is due reimbursement expenses to the tune of, I'm rounding to the nearest, a total of $4,000. It's $3,800 and then almost $300 in interest. Now, it sounds like, I didn't see it explicitly stated, but it sounds like that the Labor Commission sided with the driver and that it was, but it would not change Uber's model of independent contractors. That turns out to be on a case-by-case basis. And that, although it could provoke many other drivers from seeking the same amount of compensation or expense reimbursement. Now, I didn't necessarily know this, but I guess FedEx runs on an independent contractor basis to some degree.
I didn't know that either.
I'm not sure how. It was mentioned in this that FedEx had mastered the independent contractor agreement, but has been fending off claims such as this for years.
I actually could get info for you on that. One of my coworkers' husband works for FedEx.
I'm sure I can get more information too. Google. but I wonder if they're doing something with the drivers where they're maybe a contracted worker for a period. However, it's still FedEx vehicles
right
here and there. So I'm not really sure on that, but apparently that's how they're categorized and how they operate. And
interesting.
That's what's going on. So Uber still runs under a independent contractor model, independent operator model.
But they may be liable
model.
For some of the expenses.
But depending on the cases, case-by-case basis, they could potentially be on the hook for the operational costs of the drivers.
Now, it's kind of murky because you, as an Uber driver, can basically decide when you're on and off work, right?
Essentially, right. Yes. You express when you're available to work. And that's kind of Uber's model. They're never coming to you and saying, hey, you need to drive between the hours of this and this on these days.
Yeah, and that's how...
totally up to you, the driver, to say when you're available and what fares you're willing to pick up.
And that's how I feel, that should stay with the independent contractor service. Because, if you want to argue with a classification that you're... How do I say this? It's kind of a blurry subject because at one you want to say Well, how can you get the
reimbursement?
The reimbursement when you're a general contractor, but then say you should have it, not consider yourself a employee and choose at what time you work.
And that's really the core of Uber's statement, is that most people that do drive for Uber are not, that's not their primary income. It's supplemental. They earn their income through multiple means, and that they, as a driver, get to pick and choose when they want to work. And I'm not really sure if they get to accept how they accept the fares when they come. But that's kind of their stance. Listen, you as a driver get to pick and choose what you, where and when kind of you want to operate. But the drivers are saying that because Uber facilitates the customer finding a driver, booking the driver, and receiving payment and then paying the driver, that that very much sounds like an employer-employee relationship. So that's where the two sides of the coin sit.
I saw Uber as pretty much a platform for an exchange of money and takes a cut of each thing.
It does. When you get a ride from Uber or Lyft or any of these other services, I'm sure there's more, you're paying Uber. Uh-huh. You don't pay the driver at all. And then at the end of the week or month, Uber cuts checks to their drivers based on the fares that they conducted.
No, I thought it went directly to the driver.
Nope.
With a percentage edited out. All right.
Nope. It goes to Uber.
And so, they act as a broker in between.
Yes. But they also are facilitating the bookings. Hmm. You know, a customer is going to their Uber app and saying, I need to ride from here to here. Uber pings all the drivers in the area saying, hey, you're the nearest driver. Do you want this? And you as a driver get to accept it. It then sends all your information as a driver to the customer. This is the person to be picking you up. This is the vehicle they're going to be driving. They should be there in XYZ minutes so that you as a customer know exactly who you're dealing with.
Oh, dang. If I had a car that didn't feel like it was on its last legs, I think I should use Uber to drive people from the airport to wherever else.
You could, you know, when you're off shift, you could just get your car and enable, you know, that you're available on Uber, and then you can get a ping and pick somebody up and take them to the hotel that they're going to be at. You know, it's plausible. You have to do background checks. You have to go through a process, but it's doable. But yeah, so Uber's kind of, you know, they're dancing on the fence. And I'm sure that Lyft drivers would have the potential to do this as well. So we'll see how that goes. But we are exceeding our time limit here, so we're very sorry about that. We're a little long-winded on some of these, but that's okay. We do ask you to follow us on Twitter. Join us at Facebook. Talk to us. Engage with us. Tell us that you think we're crap. It's fine. We'll hear you. We'll listen.
We don't know what to fix if we don't know it's a problem.
That's right. Let us know. Give us feedback. And with that, we'll see you next week, where we can talk a little bit more in depth on Jurassic World, as we won't be having to hide it from somebody.
Yay.
Yay.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.